Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to the Digitally Uploaded Podcast. My name is Alan. I am now the host of this podcast for some reason. I don't know why it gave me the ability to do that. It's a terrible idea. With me this week, we've got Matt, the editor-in-chief. Say hello.
Are you crying?
G'day.
Okay. I think our second guests have also let themselves be known. We've got Ginny and we've got Tyler as well. So,
yeah, she's legitimately crying.
So we have a bit of a welfare issue at the moment, apparently. So, okay. Well, this is a really good intro. So we're going to go really quickly to some Miku music. We're going to let Ginny, like, get back to a safe place. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about...
She tried to talk, like, five times and words are not coming out.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm going to stop the train wreck. Let's go. Miku music, let's go.
Oh my god.
Welcome back, everybody. So for the first section of the podcast this week, we are going to talk about really old games, games that are around before any of those three on the podcast were even born, probably. Stuff like Asteroids and Space Invaders and Mario Brothers before there was Super Mario Brothers and Donkey Kong and all those really cool games that, I don't know, a lot of people seem to end up playing even though they are kind of antiques. And I guess that's the first question I have for all of you. Even though, you know, you were probably not playing games or around when most of these games were new, we're talking about the NES and early arcade games and all that kind of stuff. Have you kind of gone back and played any of them?
Well, so when you said early games, I was thinking before the NES. So I was thinking like only those really specific arcade games. So, you know, Asteroids, which has ass in the name.
Well, let's broaden it to NES and earlier. Let's do that. So, yeah.
No, I actually do own an NES now. I bought it in year 10 just to play Mega Man and to play, I believe, like Rygar or something, the weird like yo-yo game. That was fun. But yeah, I know, I think there's a lot of value that you can get out of NES games, even though they don't have the same, you know, progression loops as modern games, so it might not be for everyone. There is definitely
Yo-Noid, the greatest retro game.
Don't even talk to me about Yo-Noid. I forgot that Yo-Noid
has a yo-yo because he uses a yo-yo to beat up the ninjas.
Of course, because every game ended up with you beating up ninjas for some reason. I don't know. I really enjoy those games. I don't think they're for everyone because, you know, a lot of them are designed incredibly viciously towards the player. But I think there's a definite value in going back and looking at them, especially at, you know, the early Mario Bros. Games, at, you know, Mega Man examples as well. And yeah, I think it's just honestly, genuinely a really fun time if you go with the preconception that they will be slightly harder to play.
Slightly harder. I mean, they had about 20 minutes of content in them in terms of one end to the other to play through the game. So they had to make them ridiculously brutally hard. Otherwise, people wouldn't get their value for money and they would have gone on the internet if the internet was around back then and, you know, trolled the crap out of the developers. So making them super hard was probably the only way to go.
Especially with arcade games as well. Like arcade games were vicious.
Yeah, because obviously they were designed to force you to put more money in and keep playing. So the harder they were, the shorter you were playing before you had to cough up another 20 cents or whatever, quarter in America. But yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Because we go back to the Super NES and the whatever the Sega one was at the time, and we think of those games as being, you know, still playable and still pretty cool and, they kind of hold up, but these older, that one generation before and earlier arcade games kind of don't, do they? They kind of, people still play them, but nobody thinks of them as anything but kind of artifacts of a bygone era.
Yeah.
What about you, Ginny? What's your favorite super old game?
I think I've really owned the... One of the oldest games I've played, probably the original Mario Bros. That probably, I'd say, be the oldest. Maybe Duck Hunt. Just games. And I played Punch-Out as well. So, okay, yeah, maybe all the trash NES games that were out at the time were games that I played. But I actually never played them on a NES. I played them, like, on an emulator on the PC.
Mm.
So I've never been lucky enough to actually like own a NES. So that's sort of how I experienced it. And when I played it at school, at least Super Mario Brothers, like I had a computer that school gave us and they like bricked access to pretty much everything, except for some reason the site where you could download like an emulator for Super Mario Brothers. So that was kind of, I guess, my introduction to games like that was just, I played that game for like the whole 3 years that I was at that school because there was like nothing else to play and I couldn't get a Neopets. So for some reason...
couldn't get a Neopets.
For some reason...
I love how in your mind you're going from like, oh, shucks, I can't play Neopets. And then you're like, oh, might as well download an emulator for a game that's 20 years old.
Well, yeah, that was bad because, like, I saw one of the older students playing it one day, and I was like, what the hell is that? And then she was like, oh, it's this game where you play as, like, a dude. And I'm like, okay,
where you play as a dude. Welcome to most games.
And I was like, well, that sounds super generic, but better than literally, like, staring at nothing and writing emo poetry and, like, Microsoft Notepad. So I thought I'd do that instead. So for years I just played Super Mario Bros. And I guess got really good at it. But, like, that sort of... I think just playing that game through so much and having such limited entertainment options, I think it's actually a testament to, I guess, how well that game was designed. I never got sick of it. I literally played it for 3 years. And like, I never wanted to, at any point, was like, you know what? I'm going to put the game away and play something else.
Yeah, for sure. I really agree with you. I have nothing else to say to that other than yes. I had the worst. Well, I had Castlevania 2. I had that on an emulator, and that was the most confusing, frustrating disaster of my life. Because I don't know if anyone has played that game, but it is designed atrociously, and it is written, but rather translated by someone who didn't understand what a language is. So, you know, you get amazing clues like strike the orb. That's pretty good. That's great. Doesn't say what with or anything. It doesn't say where and why, but just do it. Do it, you nerd. Yes.
Was that one of Kojima's early games? Was it?
No, actually, it wasn't, Matt. I know that you don't like Kojima. Oh, Matt. Matt, my snake-eating heart is killing myself.
Well, you know, speaking of snakes, can I talk about my favorite retro game?
Is it Snake?
What, Snake?
No. It's an Atari 2600 classic, Beat 'em and Eat 'em. Are you guys familiar with that game?
I've never played that game.
I'm sorry, that just sounds...
Tyler, I don't think you can play a game then. I think that's something you should probably talk to someone about.
It's about a game, it's basically a game about really respecting women. And in the game, you can... It's like one of the early pornographic video games. It came out in 1982. But
I know this game! No,
the goal is either you can either beat them or eat them. I'll let you guys like imagine the rest of that.
Wait, what do you mean beat them?
Like, you know, beat it.
Like Michael Jackson.
Like
you control two women like on the bottom of the screen, and you got to make sure they eat them.
I think video games should be just not made anymore. I think we're done.
Oh, wait, actually, there was actually a gender-reversed version of the game, fun facts, in which the player controls two male prisoners with visibly erect penises as they attempt to catch drops of breast milk lactated by a witch.
Wait, breast milk?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
games back then, huh?
Yeah.
I think we should have just...
Video games have been art for a long time. I think Roger Ebert was really off by not accepting that early on.
With such classics as Asteroids and Beat 'em and Eat 'em and Mappy, everyone's favourite.
Oh, Mappy's great. You can't say anything bad about Mappy. Mappy's great.
No, I'm not.
It's a delight.
It's great. It's a very it's happy a little game. It's about a mouse. I've tried to turn this back into a PG-13 podcast.
Have you? Has anybody actually played one of the early JRPGs not remade? So like Final Fantasy.
I already mentioned the JRPG I played.
Beat 'em and Eat 'em.
Yeah, it's the best JRPG because you can jack off.
Yeah, RPGs. Yeah, it's like the jack off role playing game. That's right.
No, but seriously, Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest?
Yeah, I did play Final Fantasy 1. Just
as in the original.
Out of sheer interest, and it does not hold up.
It doesn't. It's pretty bad.
It is atrocious. It's very, very not good. And yeah, there's so many bugs and glitches in the entire game that you can just completely ruin the entire experience for yourself very, very quickly.
Like
the point of power, I think it's called, where it's just like four square section of the map and you can just go there and fight late game enemies and get instant levels. Kind of breaks the
game. Oh, you're talking about there's like a section in one of the dungeons, I don't know what it's called, but it's like one corridor, and then in that one corridor, every step creates a random encounter.
No, it's not that one. It's in the literally beginning of the game when you're about to fight Garland.
Oh, really?
Like, it's a corner of the map in the first area where you can just fight late-game enemies and get leveled up instantly to, like, I think, level 24.
I never knew about that one.
Yeah, it's not good. It's very badly thought out.
Putting aside those glitches, I don't remember too many of them, but what I remember being quite bad about Final Fantasy was just how poorly balanced it was that you would actually, unless you exploit glitches like that, which I didn't know about, you'd have to spend hours and hours and hours grinding away just to be able to take on like the next boss. It was really dull because the combat system was actually very slow as well. Like navigating through menus and stuff was a pain. Mm. Well, and that's a pity because I quite like the remakes of Final Fantasy 1 because the base game I quite enjoy. It's a very, you know, simple RPG, but it's got charm. But yeah, if you are going to play it, definitely play one of the remakes rather than the original.
I think, is it Dawn of Souls on the GBA?
Yeah, and that one's the basis of pretty much all the other ports of that. So if you get the PSP one, for instance, it's just the GBA one with slightly better resolution.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. They've also included, I believe, Final Fantasy II in that as well, which is a interesting bad game. but I mean, if you're ever interested in that sort of thing, check it out. Also, Dragon Quest I's pretty good, and Phantasy Star I is also pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, Phantasy Star! I love Phantasy Star. Yeah, that was a great game.
Pretty interesting little games. They don't necessarily hold up that well today, given their modern counterparts are just generally better in almost every single way. Mm. But yeah, like, if anyone's ever interested in trying out, you know, an old JRPG, you can probably do it fairly easily with an emulator. I didn't say it. And say anything. Or you can just go find a copy. Like, they've ported it to almost everything, I assume, by now.
Like, yeah, I mean, Dragon Quest you can grab on your phones and...
Mm. Oh, yeah, true.
Phantasy Star is actually...
Enough, Beat 'em and Eat 'em has not been ported ever.
I wonder why.
Like, I thought it was a shoo-in for the Wii, but it never happened.
It's actually a dick-in.
All right. And on that note, we'll go to some music.
Yep, we're going to, again, this train wreck of a podcast needs to stop before
we'll go to some music. We'll gag Tyler and...
Oh, he'll like that, though.
Oh, he probably would, but, yeah, at least he's quiet then.
Hey, don't kink shame Tyler.
And the music we've picked is... we've got music from the Caligula Effect this week, because that is a damn fine JRPG with great music, and I just want you to listen to it. So enjoy, we'll be back.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. We've all calmed down. We've all sort of, you know, gotten our stuff together. We've come together as a team and as a family from now on. And we're going to be talking a little bit about comedy games, you know. So with any other genre of media, you'll generally encounter, you know, a book or a film that'll say, I'm a comedy book slash film. And that's I was really trying to explain that in the best way possible. It didn't work out.
Comedy book slash film.
Okay. I feel like every intro that we do for each segment is like, explain like I'm five. Like,
comedy book.
Yeah, it's on the front cover. It just says, I'm a comedy book.
Okay, no, I'm a comedy book slash film.
I mean, it's adapted into a film. It's not out of the realm of possibility. So you know, there's a defined genre of, you know, comedy, you know, books, films, TV series, where that is the main point. However, in games, we don't really seem to have that for some reason.
Well, I think the reason is that most games aren't very funny.
Okay, well, Tyler's just throwing shade at the entire game industry. That's fine. Yep.
I mean, like, think about it. How many games are genuinely laugh out loud funny?
God
of War. A lot of games attempt humor.
God of War is
being funny, like, a lot of them aren't.
I do not know. No, well, I would say that there definitely are a lot of games that I have laughed at, so... You've got, you know, I'm going to go back to Portal because everyone knows what Portal is, and Portal 2 because, again, everyone knows what Portal 2 is. Those games were genuinely, like, I was half there for the gameplay, half there for the comedy, and I still would not consider it a comedy game. It's still a puzzle game, but with, you know, comedy elements.
And well, I mean...
Oh, okay. For it.
I was going to say, for me, the obvious example is the Hyperdimension Neptunia series, which is... overtly funny, like the whole thing's designed around making you laugh, and yet we still talk about it as a JRPG first and foremost. So yeah, it's odd that we don't talk about Hyperdimension as a comedy. And I don't know, for me it seems to be that the reason seems to be that when we talk about video games, we kind of break them down as by their mechanics, by the gameplay mechanics, and that's how we define a genre, as opposed to the content, the narratives, or the, you know, those kinds of
games,
the storytelling,
like, where the funniness is like interactive. You think of something like Monkey Island, where you're choosing the responses and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. I actually hadn't thought about Monkey Island, but I would definitely consider that a comedy game, like, primarily because I'm not really there to click on stuff. Like, you know, I'm there for the writing. There's nothing really else that's keeping me interested apart from the fact that I want to laugh.
Yeah, I think a lot of games, even if they have humor in it, they're more involved. Like Neptunia, for example, there's probably too much RPG that isn't very good of a role-playing game.
Wow.
Drags it down. So focus more on the comedy, I think it'd be a stronger... They're not getting
You're sitting game. Next to someone who... thinks that Vert is the best waifu. Why would you do
that's
this?
That's fine, game? But she's...
That doesn't mean that it's a good RPG.
Listen, okay, listen. I feel what Matt's trying to say in the sense that, like, I feel like people have, like, a checklist for each, I guess, superimposed game genre. So, like, RPG, you know, like, leveling system, crafting system, I don't know, like, either turn-based combat, I guess, in the JRPG situation and stuff like that. And as soon as, like, a game has those checklists, like, ticks those boxes, people are like, right, that's the genre the game's going to be in. So I think that's why we get games like Hyperdimension Neptunia, which are ostensibly about, like, tiny skirts and console wars. People call them JRPGs because they tick all those particular boxes and people are like, okay, 3 out of 5, good enough, that's a JRPG. But that's, like, a very linear way of thinking, I think, that doesn't really make sense because why would you want to lump... No, I mean, they're both great games. Like, for example, I Am Setsuna, right? That's a great game, but that is, like, a world away from a game like Hyperdimension Neptunia. So to me, it kind of makes no sense if someone's like, oh, I'm a JRPG fan. I like I Am Setsuna, so I would also like Hyperdimension Neptunia. Like, I think tonally, they're so different that we need to have more distinctions between what we actually call games, I guess, or categorize games.
That's a great point, Jenny.
What is it? You sounded like a talk show host.
Dr. Tyler.
But I think the thing with like
Phil has arrived every
games, you also have like a masochist quality to you. But like, I was really disappointed when you went into like the checklist thing. I thought you were gonna go into like the checklist of a waifu because you were talking about Vert right then. You were like, "There's a checklist for this."
There's only one item in my waifu checklist. Let's not go into that. No.
Yeah, the checklist for waifu is just simply twin tails. That's it.
Okay, well, there you go. You know, that's it. So,
I want to thank you for somehow managing to derail that conversation entirely.
You're welcome. Yeah, but on topic, I do agree with Jeannie. I think that's because we tend to define games by the mechanics as opposed to the content of them. I think that the genres in games are a little bit too broad to be particularly useful.
Oh, the action-adventure genre, which can officially die in a fire.
I mean, I see people constantly kind of debating whether we should be splitting out JRPGs and RPGs and things like that and trying to, you know, reduce the number of genres as it is. And it's like, well, that would mean that you're kind of comparing, or you'd say, and if you like Skyrim, you must therefore also like Atelier, which is pretty nonsense. So I think talking about games more in terms of the kind of the content of what's in them is, it's what happens with film and it's what happens with literature and stuff. We don't really talk about film in terms of, this is a 3D film or this is a film in color. You know, we don't talk about them in the kind of technical terms. We talk about them as, you know, what this is a superhero film, or it's content of what the film offers that we talk about. And I think that's probably the better way to go about games as well. So talking about Hyperdimension Neptunia, not as a JRPG, but as a satire or a comedy game, or, you know, South Park Stick of Truth or whatever.
How about Neptunia as a bad video game?
No, wow. Tyler, I thought we gagged you.
I'm unable to enforce that. I'm sorry.
You're literally like the only one able to enforce that.
No, I only gag people on my waifu checklist. I'm kidding. Leave that off the podcast.
No, it's staying in.
That turned out incredibly the opposite of what I was trying to say.
Well, anyway, so
here we have Ginny and Tyler digging their own graves.
Yeah. I do want to actually quickly ask you, though, a game like Comedy Night, where the idea is that you go into an online chat room sort of thing and try and be a comedian, would that be a comedy game? When that's literally all there is. Like, it is a chat room with, like, 3D models. You go in there and you try and be funny to people online. Is that the purest sense of what a comedy game is?
I guess mechanically that's a comedy game. But yeah. Is the end goal, is it like a sinister end goal whereby, like, I don't know, people have to like laugh themselves to death, or is it like a strategy type thing?
No, it's like, just like you try and be funny to people.
You're trying to have a good time, Jenny. Why are you gonna like take it to death all the time? How can we insert human suffering into this video game idea?
It is. I don't understand this game, Alan.
There is like there is no real
people that you're trying to make laugh, or is it video game characters that you're trying?
It's an online chat room, so you each like pick a character that represents you and you go into this chat room that is a comedy lounge sort of thing, and one person gets up on the stage and starts talking through their mic and tries to be funny.
So is it like a game or is it Second Life?
It's a game. It's on Steam.
That doesn't mean it's a game.
It is a game. I would consider it a game.
Is it like a chat room with avatars?
Yeah, pretty much. But you go into like this online lobby system. And you're allowed to go up on stage when there's no one else on the stage, so you can then,
think about it, Matt. Life itself is a big video game.
I try not to think too much, but...
Digitallydownloaded.net, everyone.
This is really confusing me. Is it... I don't understand how this is a game at all.
It is.
It's a chat room.
You make people laugh. That's the game. That's part of the game. People have different, you know, difficulty levels of how your comedy works.
A war game?
Yeah.
What defines a game?
Yeah, what defines
a game? Yeah. This is getting very confusing now because you can go into a comedy club and it's exactly the same thing, right?
Yeah, but now it's in a safe location because you can make idiot jokes like, I'm going to fucking... Oh, I swore. I'm going to blur that out.
That's a really good joke, Alan.
Yeah, that was the joke, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to cut it there, I think.
old Andrew does.
I'm not just very confused.
I've confused Matt horribly. I've said a swear word. I'm tired. Ginny's gonna gag Tyler.
Hey, I think you're presuming a lot about my sexual orientation here.
I'm not presuming anything. Matt, what have we got for music?
Persona 5.
Persona 5. We got Persona 5.
And another great waifu.
And welcome back, everyone. So for the in-depth this week, we're going to look at not one particular game, I think, but we'll look at a series of franchise. Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem is, I think, a series that most people who have Nintendo consoles, at least over the last couple of generations, have played at least one or two of. And I would imagine most people who played at least some of them enjoy them, because overall the series has its up and downs, of course, like any other, but I think the games are pretty damn solid and really enjoyable. So let's start with Ginny. Ginny, Fire Emblem, which are kind of your highlights, and what do you like about the series in particular?
Well, my very first Fire Emblem was Sacred Stones back on the GBA. So probably not the first Fire Emblem for Matt, because he's a little bit older.
It's the second one in English.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
the first one was The Blazing Sword, and that was on the GBA as well. And then Sacred Stones was the second English Fire Emblem title. They're obviously, the series stretches right back to the NES, but they only started to localize them back with those two.
There you go.
So you got in quite early for that series, Ginny?
Yeah. Early in the West, I guess. So Sacred Stones was the first one, and it was the first kind of game that I played of that genre. I admittedly got the game without really knowing what it was. Like, at that time, I think I hadn't really played many games. I played probably, like I said previously, a lot of Neopets. So,
oh boy, I can't wait to get my Neo points to level up my Fire Emblem.
And a lot of Super Mario, Alan. So at that point, not very experienced in the kind of game that Fire Emblem was. But it's just something about how I found Sacred Stones in particular, and I found that it's been really hard for later games to capture this, but just the sense of immediacy and the kind of atmospheric feel that the game throws at you. Like, if anyone remembers the Sacred Stones opening, you open with like Erica and Ephraim, and I think Ephraim's out at war and Erica and her retainers are like in grave danger or something. And the game sort of throws you into this sort of system whereby you've got, you know, like you've got your chevaliers, you've got some Hindu political intrigue, and there's just so many threads that you're introduced to at once that you think would be overwhelming, but really it's just curiosity inducing. Like, I feel like Sacred Stones did so well at setting the scene for you in a way that was very enticing. It was like, here are these three characters. You barely know them, but the way that they did everything from, like, the little dialogue bubbles, like, sort of, like, setting the story up for you initially, I found that so gripping. And that was sort of why I think I continued buying all the other Fire Emblems that I could get my hands on, because Sacred Stones started and ended so well.
Yeah.
Like, I think the world building that you're a part of, because you essentially world build through conquest, that was a, I guess, like a technique that I'd never come across before in the games I played previously. So it really, really gripped me. And that's kind of what I enjoy about the series. It's just the, not only the tactical role play, but the sort of medieval power fantasy that you get to participate in. I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
Like, well, the Sacred Stone starts with an actual invasion of your castle. So it starts with the stakes pretty high immediately. And yeah, it's certainly gripping from the very outset, I think.
The exact same experience as Ginny as well. Like, I had it on an emulator.
You also played a lot of Neopets.
I'd also played a lot of Neopets. I did have several Neopets, and they all fought and died for me. so I had it on an emulator.
What do you feed Neopets?
I don't know. Blood?
Like omelets. Just omelets. And the blood of other Neopets.
Most of the blood. So I had an emulator, and because I didn't have much money as a kid to buy video Grimbles. So I would, you know, play that on a computer just every afternoon, along with Metroid Fusion and stuff like that. And that was sort of my introduction to turn-based strategies. And then that led me into Advance Wars, which I ended up preferring more to Fire Emblem, which is why I'm kind of a little bit upset that Advance Wars isn't getting the same respect as it deserves, unfortunately. I will say, though, having not played a Fire Emblem game since the Quantum Wii, I believe it's Path of Radiance, or is it
Life? Yes, Path of Radiance. Is
that the Wii one? Because there's a GameCube one as well. I played the Wii one, and that was pretty dang good, even though Ike's not that great, because he fights for his friends. Yeah, I don't know. I've not played enough of them since then, because I never had a 3DS, and I'm sort of hoping that the Switch will get, you know, a full-fledged Fire Emblem 3D big boy game.
Oh, it does. It has one.
Yeah.
It does?
That's already confirmed. Yeah, there's one in development right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to buy that then. Okay, it's happening.
We don't know anything about it. We don't know anything about it just yet, but we do know it's on its way, and it's in
development. It's the third game in the Ike series. Hooray. Everyone's favorite. Yeah.
I mean, for me, the thing, and you mentioned Advance Wars, Alan, the reason I kind of prefer Fire Emblem to Advance Wars is I like the way that the characters are done in Fire Emblem better. The way that each battle you basically get introduced to a new character, and they then will join your team if you do the right thing and talk to them or fulfill whatever condition you need in the middle of the battle to get them to join you. And then from that point on, once they're in the team, they pop up in conversations, you get to develop relationships with them in later games and all that kind of stuff.
You get to rub them.
Yeah, you get to rub them. All that kind of stuff is all the good stuff. And the fact that if you play Fire Emblem the way it's meant to be played, I know...
The hard mode, yeah.
There's difficulty settings in the more recent games that don't have permadeath. But Fire Emblem was meant to be played where if a character dies on the battlefield, they're gone. And I think that was a really good touch because it made you kind of care that much more about them and really work to level them up properly and to make sure that they were competitive on the battlefield so they weren't just getting squashed because they're underleveled.
You got to give them and that late forced, game of fuel.
And it forced you to really use them all and learn their strengths and weaknesses as characters. And it just had a better sense of character to it compared to... Advance Wars, so I guess that's why I liked Fire Emblem and why I still play them, even if they're not quite as good as the first one, Blazing Sword, which I played, which I really, really got me hooked on the whole series. There's always one or two characters I love.
Advance Wars a lot more, basically because I didn't like the permadeath aspect of Fire Emblem. And I never really got too into the series until Awakening.
Because they made it so basic people like me could actually enjoy the series and not have all these characters die on them.
Yeah.
So I just enjoyed,
it's less stressful. I feel like with my strategy games, I either want to go full on like micromanagey, like hardcore XCOM nonsense disaster fest, or I want to go like sort of casually, sort of, you know, have a quick strategy game. And I don't think that Fire Emblem for me is either of those. I think it sits really strangely enough in the middle. And I kind of don't want that because I don't want the stress of losing a character, but I also like don't want, you know, like the lack of stakes as well, I think, is what I'm trying to say. Well, I don't know. It's in this bizarre world.
Like, the more recent Fire Emblems, Alan, have actually two different sets of difficulty settings where you can set the actual difficulty of the battles, so you can make it hard, and you can turn permadeath off. So if you're like me, you play it on hard and permadeath on and then get really frustrated with the game because you get stuck on a level and can't get past it and then put it down and don't come back for 6 months. But
and then they get immediately confused upon re-entry as well. So
yeah, exactly. but if for someone like you, I think you'd be okay, or you probably enjoy it where you can put it on difficult, so the battles themselves are hard. But if a character dies on you, they're not gone. Mm-hmm. The permadeath is off. So I think Nintendo's done the right thing, or Intelligent Systems, or I don't even know.
Would you say they've done an intelligent thing?
I don't know if that's actually owned by Nintendo or not. Whatever.
All right. There we go.
Intelligent Systems has done an intelligent thing. There you go, Alan. I made your joke for you.
Yay!
where they've actually put all those difficulty settings in, which has made Fire Emblem more accessible. Because I remember playing The Blazing Blade, and that game was completely linear. There was no way of grinding, which was in the Sacred Stones. But the very first one, if for whatever reason you lost a couple of critical characters or you didn't level things up right, you would find yourself about 30 missions into the game and absolutely impossible to actually make any further progress. So your only option at that point would be to actually restart the entire game again. And I think I did that 7 or 8 times before I finally managed to finish this game the first time. So, yeah, that was 100 and something hours of playing and replaying levels that I'll never get back. but I did it because I love the characters. That's the thing. Yeah, for me, Fire Emblem's all about the characters. And as long as the series continues to produce good, interesting, varied characters, I will continue to play it, I think.
Like Camilla, everyone's favorite dragon lady.
Yeah,
no one likes Camilla.
Camilla has a lot of depth to her personality.
Yeah, she has a lot of depth and a lot of width as well.
She's a great asset to the team.
She's got a bounce in her step.
Playing with Camilla on my team puts a bounce in my step, you know? I'm just saying.
I don't know how I feel about rubbing Camilla.
She appears to enjoy it anecdotally is what I've heard from.
I've heard it on the grapevine.
But really though, like, I mean, I know a lot of people like bag on Awakening and the games after it because they're like, I guess people are either too vanilla now or they're too toned down for the basics, like Tyler.
Yeah.
But I actually really kind of enjoy how there's like a greater character focus. Everything from like the wildly improved cutscenes to the, I guess, incredibly like ham-fisted political intrigue, sort of like medieval ex-shogun aesthetic, like all these elements that you don't think should work together that normally look so disparate, Fire Emblem somehow manages to pull together in one sort of cohesive fantasy puddle. So
yeah, people kind of like the way they're using puddle.
people make fun of the dating game stuff in the more recent Fire Emblem stuff, but it fits with what that series was always about anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the relationship between the characters was important, mm-hmm. and they're cute characters, so, you know, it just makes sense to throw in the, things a little bit further to have a bit of fan service in there, but more importantly, to actually give the characters a chance to properly interact and have those kind of conversations and get married and have kids and all that kind of stuff is... That's all very Fire Emblem, and I never understood why people made fun of it, except that they were incredibly insecure people and need to grow up.
I mean,
you can just say my name, Matt.
Yeah. The rubbing thing is a little bit over the top. I'm gonna be real.
Well, like, it's just on the top, you know, you're not naked rubbing. It's just on the top.
It's just a head pat, Alan. Get over it.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, then if you want, you can like blow on them very gently.
You can leave blow on them. So you can then do it off their chest, yeah.
You can blow on the DS and it kind of like, you know, they react a bit to it. You know, like it's all fun and games.
Okay, so if I went up to someone in the street and started blowing on them gently, how do you reckon it would work?
That's actually how Jenny met me.
Oh my God.
Really awkward, but I was
kind of hit by the end. You played Fire Emblem and you're like, oh
yeah, you're like, this is happening, like relationship moving from like a C to a B right now.
Are we only a B?
I don't know. I feel like a B is overstating your achievements.
D for blow.
Anyway, this is a PG-13 podcast.
Look, like the podcast's already down the drain, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is a special adult-only podcast. That the first section kind of cemented that. Tyler's presence in general means that, you
know, not safe for anyone, not even adults.
A podcast goes from being PG to being, you know, refused classification in Australia and New Zealand.
To be fair, I think Tyler's been okay this time. It's really been my fault for blowing on Camilla.
Don't blow Camilla.
It's too late. It's already happened, anecdotally.
Not me. I didn't do it. What are you talking about?
Anyway, yeah.
Fire Emblem is a good game.
It's great.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, just quickly before we wrap up, what did you think of Fire Emblem Warriors as a swerve for the series? I know you played it a bit, Ginny. Did you think it did the Fire Emblem series justice?
I think it drew from the more popular elements and it was very good about the fan service. I mean, there are some great outfits for characters like Camilla, for example.
Oh my God.
No, but like in all seriousness, like I think that it kept the essence of the character relationships in Fire Emblem, because if you look up some of the dialogue options on YouTube, like conversations between people, it is sort of very much the kind of content and sort of tonally what you get in a Fire Emblem game. And they maintain lots of canon relationships from those games, despite the, you know, the timeline crossing that is basically, you know, the giant clusterfuck that is the Fire Emblem Warriors timeline. I think that even though it may not sort of stay faithful mechanically to what the Fire Emblem games are like, tonally, it's still very consistently and identifiably a Fire Emblem game. And it plays well. Like, if you like Musou games, you know, you'll probably love this, because you don't really need to have a background to Fire Emblem to enjoy it. But at the same time, if you don't have a Fire Emblem background, this might be the game that kind of, I guess, introduces you to the characters and what they can be like. So if you haven't played Fire Emblem before, but you have a Switch, maybe start with the Fire Emblem Warriors game. It's pretty good. I liked it.
I really like why we're not talking about the most popular Fire Emblem game, Super Smash Brothers Melee.
I fight for my friends.
We like Ike. We like Ike.
We like Ike.
Oh, God.
It's funny, Ginny, one thing, I don't know if you've had a chance to check it out yet, but in Fire Emblem Warriors, a new update actually makes the characters not playable in the sense that you don't control them. You can just you can tell them where to go on the battlefield and stuff. So it turns Fire Emblem into kind of this real-time tactics game. Which is really neat. I actually quite like it, actually. I like that update. That plus all the exploding armor that the updates have brought in.
Yeah, you can blow on the armor pieces as well.
Destructible armor on Lin is really good. It's really, really good.
This is a PG-13 podcast.
Lin's way better than Camilla. And on that note, we'll go to some music.
We're gonna cut it from there and end this nightmare.
Yeah. Fire Emblem music, Fire Emblem Awakening, this track is from, which is a
Wake
good
me up
Fire Emblem there. With good music. And thanks very much for actually sitting through this whole podcast by getting to this point. You've done a really good job, listeners. And we apologize for Tyler, and we'll be back next week.